Welcome to Net Zero Investor with Mona, where we discuss how investors tackle climate change, the biggest issue of the 21st century. Today, we want to take a closer look at the role of banks in tackling net zero. The new year has obviously started with quite a big development because some of the biggest banks in the world, Citi, JP Morgan, Chase, and Bank of America, among others, have announced at the beginning of the year that they want to exit a net zero banking alliance. This is, of course, all taking part in the context of Donald Trump soon to take office. And for many investors, represents a significant U-turn on net zero. So with us today, we've got Jeanne Martin. Jeanne is head of the banking program at ShareAction. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Jeanne, what do you think has really prompted the exits of these prominent banks from the Net Zero Banking Alliance? Do you think these were just concerns over legal threats with the Trump administration due to take power? Or do you think that's also an attempt to dodge perhaps heightened expectations for their members?
Well, we think it's not for us to say why individual banks have left the Net Zero Banking Alliance. What we do know is that at the moment, they are saying they are still committed to climate action. Indeed, some of them remain members of GFANZ and will continue to actively contribute to the initiative. So, for example, the CEO of Bank of America, Brian Moynihan, and the CEO of Citi, Jane Fraser, have said that they would remain part of GFANZ principles. Regardless, to be taken seriously on climate by concerned investors, they will need to match words with action. For example, by setting clear strategies to phase out their financing of dirty activities like fossil fuels and ramp up their financing of sustainable and green activities. If they fail to do that, the truth is climate change remains a financial risk and communities across the world are already facing the harmful impact of global heating. That's why ultimately, despite voluntary initiatives having a lot of benefits, we need regulators to step up with robust regulation that will ensure banks will be playing their part in building the sustainable future that we need.
Interesting. Just last year, the Net Zero Banking Alliance has actually adopted these guidelines for climate target setting for banks. And one thing that stood out to me in that is the fact that there are also targets on capital market activities. So the kind of organizations that banks underwrite, for example, or lend to. Could this have impacted the decision to leave the alliance?
Again, that's not for us to speculate about, but my opinion is that it's unlikely. We've done a bit of work analyzing banks' climate targets and we're engaging quite actively with the Partnership for Carbon-Related Accounting Financials, which, as you know, was developing guidelines for banks to disclose their facilitated emissions, so the emissions embedded in their capital markets activities. And what we found is that actually most of the major US banks, such as JP Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo, already include capital markets activities in their targets and have done so for several years. And that stands in stark contrast with European Bank, because what we have found is that out of Europe's largest 20 publicly listed banks, only HSBC and Barclays include those activities in their decarbonization targets. And they don't even include the full amount of these activities. So they apply a weighting of 33%, thereby underestimating the impact that their financing is having on the real economy.
That is super interesting and challenges a bit with what we tend to do. I think I can say from one European to another. We tend to pat ourselves on the back and say we're the good guys and the Americans are often the bad guys. But it's clearly not as clear-cut as that then. So it sounds like some of the European banks have got some catching up to do on climate as well.
Absolutely. European banks have set a number of standards for the sector, but they lag behind on a number of things. And that's why it's always really important to have a good overview of what's happening across the sector, across the globe.
I guess one interesting thing that happened right after these banks announced their exit from the Net Zero Banking Alliance is that the GFANZ has the Glasgow Financial Alliance. And Net Zero has actually announced that it's overhauling its approach and that you can take part in it without having to commit as a member, as you alluded. Will we get kind of a two speeds Net Zero road and perhaps only the really committed banks will stay in a Net Zero Banking Alliance? Is that the opportunity?
Well, there's a lot to unpack here, but maybe to start with GFANZ's decision to walk back on its commitment to require members to align their financing activities with the goals of the Paris Agreement. We think that's a dangerous decision that could lead to a negative ripple effect across GFANZ's members from across the globe and kind of send them the message that they can reduce the ambition levels of their climate strategies as climate change impacts like extreme weather events are harming communities across the world. We think it's a positive thing that so far the Net Zero Banking Alliance has indeed reaffirmed its commitment to net zero. And in an odd way, the departure of US banks could present an interesting opportunity to the alliance to rethink its strategy and to use its resources towards setting more ambitious standards and really building a coalition of the willing. Because if you look at the climate strategies of the banks that have exited the alliance, the truth is, in many aspects, those strategies lag the strategies of their peers. And many of the banks that have exited the alliance are some of the world's largest providers of financing to the fossil fuel industry. So there's a real opportunity here to redefine what good looks like for the banking sector and to continue pushing for better and more robust climate strategies across the sector.
And the way GFANS has framed this, that stood out to me, is that we've got like regulatory standards now that are widely adopted, the ISSB standards, but we want to look now at funding the energy transition, like helping to fund the energy transition. What do you make of that shift in emphasis?
I think there's two parts to that question. Firstly, there's GFANS' decision to focus a lot of its resources towards addressing barriers to mobilizing capital, which we think is critical to achieving net zero by 2050. GFANS has a really big membership base of banks with different expertise, geographies, styles, and clearly its members have a critical role to play to mobilize capital to achieve climate goals. If we look at the last scenario by the International Energy Agency, what they found is that private finance needs to contribute around $3 trillion in US dollars out of $4 trillion of clean energy investment needed annually by 2030. And we're not reaching those investment levels. So clearly, members of GFANS have a key role to play here. We've also found that the strategies set by banks to mobilize capital are insufficient and suffer from big loopholes. That being said, the issue that we have is this framing around shifting focus away from reducing financing and investment in dirty activities like fossil fuels. We need the two to act together. Banks need to be incentivized to reduce their financing of the fossil fuel industry and mobilize capital towards sustainable and green activities. We can't do both in isolation. We need to do both at the same time, and we need to do it at the scale and pace needed to avert the worst consequences of the climate crisis.
That's really interesting. So perhaps there's a slight risk or a significant risk of greenwashing here if GFANS kind of completely loosening its criteria?
I think there is definitely a risk in overstating the impact that GFANS members are having if the focus is only on their financing of sustainable and green activities, because that does help crowd out some dirty activities, but it's simply not enough. The economics aren't there yet for fossil fuels to be phased out at the pace and scale that we needed. And that's why we really need initiatives like GFANS, but also other stakeholders like regulators and investors to push banks to phase out their financing from fossil fuels as they ramp up financing for green activities.
And just to pick up on something you said right at the beginning of our conversation, a question of regulation. Do you think as these networks like the Net Zero Banking Alliance are kind of gradually, I don't want to say falling apart, but clearly struggling, regulation will become more important than actually holding banks accountable?
Absolutely. I think the recent departures from US banks from the Net Zero Banking Alliance highlights the limits of voluntary action. It is problematic that these banks have left the NZBA. We think it sends a signal to the market that climate change might be deprioritized by these banks going forward. But the truth is, the guidelines of the NZBA suffered from important loopholes already. And so those two things together really suggest that regulation has a really key role to play in incentivizing banks to phase out their financing of fossil fuels, which at times remain really lucrative for the banks, and scale up financing for sustainable and green activities. We also think that investors have a key role to play, because the truth is we are seeing governments in Europe veering ever more to the right. We have seen the re-election of Trump, and clearly governments are not the only ones that are necessary to this. We also need stakeholders like investors to use their full power to push their holdings to do more on climate and to really incentivize them to take credible and robust action on climate change.
Okay, that's quite a nice segue into my next question. Let's look at the 2025 AGM season and what specifically investors can do if they want to engage with banks on this.
Well, there are so many things that investors can do. That's the exciting thing. So if we start with equity investors, of course, the first step in the engagement journey is to engage privately with your holding. But we would hope that most investors have already had conversations with their bank holding on climate change, given how critical banks are to the success of the green transition. Other tools that they have is, for example, attending the annual general meeting of a bank they've been engaging with and delivering a statement at that AGM. Here at ShareAction, we tend to coordinate numerous AGM statements every year. For example, in 2024, we coordinated a statement that was backed by a coalition of roughly 15 investors asking HSBC to make improvements to its sustainable finance targets and disclosures and to set a renewable energy target. And off the back of that, we have secured a meeting with senior decision makers at the bank. So clearly that can be impactful, but clearly it remains a relatively soft tool. And there's more that investors can do. So they can file resolutions, which are a unique way to put your issue directly onto the agenda of the board of the company you're filing a resolution at, but also of all of the investors of that company, which will then be asked to vote on the resolution that you've been put forward. And often, even in the case of investors that vote against your resolution, this will force them to have conversations with that company on the issue that you've raised. You can also use your voting rights. So, for example, voting against the re-election of a director that has traditionally been opposed to better action on climate or faces conflicts of interest. And if you're a bondholder, there's obviously other tools that you have at your disposal, such as refusing to take part in the next roadshow of that company or to take part in the next bond issuance.
Speaking of bonds, banks obviously also play a really important role in underwriting debt issued by major fossil fuel companies. And noticed recently there's been an interesting trend in like these fossil fuel companies like Total issuing debt with increasingly longer maturities. And banks such as BNP Paribas have already, for example, said that they're no longer supporting these issuances, but others such as Deutsche Bank continue to underwrite that kind of debt. Is this something investors can maybe address with banks?
Absolutely. We think investors have a duty to engage with banks on that topic. We've published research a couple of years ago that showed that roughly half of banks' financing to the fossil fuel industry was through capital markets activities. But in most cases, capital markets activities fail to be included in banks' decarbonization targets, meaning they just do not feature in those banks' targets and disclosures. It was really positive to see BNP's commitment to seize support for general oil and gas bond facilitation. And interestingly, a few months later, we saw one of their direct competitors, Crédit Agricole, make a similar commitment. And that was a result of course, the commitment made by BNP, but also engagement with stakeholders, including investors. We coordinated an AGM statement that was backed by investors at the AGM of Crédit Agricole, where we asked the bank to do more to reduce its facilitation of general oil and gas bond, because that was one of the main ways the bank was providing capital to the fossil fuel industry.
Yes, it's absolutely mind-blowing as well. If you think about it, Total issuing bonds with like a 50-year maturity, how can you possibly credibly underwrite that when there's like zero Paris alignment at the underlying companies? It's just worrying.
It is very worrying. And interestingly, on bond, what we often hear from banks is that we shouldn't overstate the impact that they're having on those bond issuance because they are merely facilitators. The truth is, those bond issuances would not happen without banks. And when you look at those banks' sustainable finance targets and disclosures, from that perspective, they're very happy to be very clear about the number of green issuances they might have facilitated and to often overstate the impact that they've had. So there's a double discourse happening in the banking industry where, on the one hand, banks are saying, do not overstate the impact we're having when we facilitate bonds to companies like Total that will contribute to the expansion of the fossil fuel sector. But please give us extra credit when we help raise capital through capital markets for green and sustainable activities.
That is such an important point. And it kind of makes me think as well of the fact that investors increasingly, I think, are at a dead end when engaging with fossil fuel companies, because you've seen a lot of really powerful shareholder resolutions being put forward at Shell and Exxon and BP, among others. but it seems to really not lead to anything because the majority of shareholders always seem to vote with the board anyway. And obviously the core business model of those energy companies is fossil fuels. So it will be incredibly hard to change that. Whereas with banks, it's not their core business model to lend to the fossil fuel industry. So there's perhaps more leeway to change that, isn't it?
Absolutely. And what we have found through our engagements with banks is that shareholder resolutions can be extremely impactful. To give you a recent example, at the end of 2023, we filed a resolution together with 19 institutional investors at Barclays, asking Barclays to do more to reduce its financing of the fossil fuel industry. We initially decided to keep our resolution private and to engage in negotiation with the bank. And that really had an impact because we were really able to directly feed into the oil and gas policy of the bank. We were able to push the bank to make more robust commitments than the ones they had initially envisioned making. And whilst Barclays' new oil and gas policy is far from perfect, we were really able to see that shareholder engagement can lead to real-world impact and can materially influence the policy that dictates what banks can and cannot finance and under what condition.
Yes, I remember that. I think Brunel Pension Partnership was among others involved in that. So looking into the year, I know it's still early days, but are there any key AGMs or potential resolutions that investors should be keeping an eye out for?
So we mostly focus on Europe. So I'm going to provide a kind of European perspective on that question. But here at ShareAction, we have two priorities for the next AGM season. The first one is to secure additional commitments by Europe's leading fossil fuel financiers to restrict the financing of the sector. And secondly, is to start escalating our engagement with banks on the topic of sustainable finance. So starting with the first one, we have seen some improvements in the industry. You have mentioned BNP Paribas' leading commitment to refuse to take part in a general oil and gas bond facilitation going forward. But the truth is, European banks continue to provide a lifeline to fossil fuel companies that show no real intention of decarbonizing their activities. For example, Barclays is one of the world's largest providers of financing to LNG. And interestingly, when looking at LNG, banks that have usually escaped the attention of climate conscious investors and campaigners such as Santander have massively increased their financing of the sector. That's based on data from Banking on Climate Chaos. So clearly there is a lot of work to do still. We have made notable wins on upstream oil and gas, but there's this kind of creeping issue that is rising up people's agenda in the form of energy. So we plan to hold banks accountable. We'll be working with investors, NGO allies, public and members of communities affected by banks' direct and indirect financing to do so. Secondly, when it comes to holding banks accountable on sustainable finance, as I said, banks have a crucial role to play in mobilizing this kind of capital, but they're not yet doing their bit. And to illustrate that with an example, we published a report last year looking at the sustainable finance targets of Europe's largest 20 publicly listed banks. And one of the things that we assessed is how their strategy compared to some of the goals in the IEA scenario. And we found that 18 out of the 20 banks in our sample were not on track to meet the $10 to $1 ratio of green investment to fossil fuel investments that International Energy says is needed by 2030. And that includes Barclays, BNP, Paribas, and HSBC. We've seen increased investor appetite to hold European banks accountable on their sustainable finance strategies. So for example, last year, we coordinated a big group of investors to ask a question at the AGM of Société Générale. I've also mentioned HSBC. We've also started coordinating engagements between banks and investors ahead of the AGM season to see if we could secure any commitments ahead of the AGM season. And based on how banks respond, we will decide what to do at their AGMs.
That's super interesting. So certainly something to watch out for and something we will continue to cover at Net Zero Investor. Thanks so much for joining us today, Jan.
Thank you again for having me.
And to our listeners, hopefully enjoyed this podcast. If you want to have these type of discussions in person, our next event coming up is the DC Forum on the 30th of January. And we also have a Renewable Infrastructure Summit coming up on the 26th of February. And both events will be in London, and you can find more details on our site, Longview Networks. Thanks so much for listening.